This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It is hour number two, and we've got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. We also got Dave Preston, WTOP. He'll talk about last night's Washington football team win against the Giants, the stellar play of Taylor Heinicke, and also the game in general. We'll get his thoughts on it from a Washington perspective. But it was a sad night for New York. Well, a certain level of New York fan. If you're a Giants fan, you're usually a Yankees fan. If you're a Jets fan, you're usually a Mets fan. My father's the exact opposite. He's a Mets fan and a Giants fan. But nevertheless, usually if you're a Giants fan, you're a Yankee fan. Yankees, they lost to Baltimore in 10 innings last night. And the Giants, they lost a game in which they committed an offsides penalty on the final kick that was missed, giving Washington another chance to send it through the uprights. Now, it's a tough loss for both teams because the Giants aren't going to win a lot of games. And when you have a chance to win a game, you should capitalize on it because the wins are not going to come up in buckets. So take advantage of it because with an extra team in the playoffs, you might give yourself a chance if you just win just the right number of games and luck finds your way. But for the Yankees, it's a little bit different. Now, the Yankees lost with, you want to talk about last second? The Giants lose on an offsides penalty on the final kick. The Yankees lost when they were one out strike away from beating the lowly Baltimore Orioles, who only have 47 wins on the season and 99 losses. But they threw a wild pitch that scored the tying run in the ninth, and then an RBI single in the 10th scored the winning run for Baltimore. And they beat the Yankees, who are in a wild card race with Toronto, Boston, and Oakland for the playoffs. And we are getting close to the end of the season. So if you are a typical New York Giants Yankee fan, yesterday was a really, really tough day. I feel sorry for them, but I kind of don't feel sorry for them. But I don't feel sorry for is you, because we've got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. We'll also dissect a little bit more on this Thursday night game to what it means in the future of one Taylor Heinicke, who played pretty well for Washington, and where does Ron Rivera go from there with Dave Preston at WTOP. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. We're asking the question, who is to blame for the Giants? The team as a whole, Dexter Lawrence, Joe Judge, Darius Slayton, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio or at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Oh, it's the good, the bad, and the dumb. We're not going to send you into the weekend without this. We did last week, and we were kind of, you know, really felt bad, but Ron wasn't here. So,
yeah,
you know, we sent you into the weekend without the good, the bad, and the dumb. We're not going to do it this time. So let's get going with the good of the day.
The good of the day. You know that viral meme, the blinking guy?
Yes. I don't know much of it, but I know of it.
No one really knows. I mean, he kind of looks like... he looks familiar, but nobody really knows who he is. I mean, it's because he is a nobody, but everyone has used it at some point. Everyone has seen it. It's just a guy who's like, wow, you know?
Yeah, like he blinks. He's just like,
you know?
Yeah.
Well, his name is Drew Scanlon.
Oh.
And he is using his social media powers. He just recently got on, I think he just recently got onto Twitter. I don't know. He instantly became verified, which is stupid. But he is using his social media power to raise money for an MS charity. And he is, like, within 2 days raised over 50 grand.
Really? Good for him.
Yes.
Just for being the blinking man guy?
Just for being the blinking man.
That much power?
Yeah, he pretty much came out and said, hey, I know you guys have all enjoyed using this meme over the years, but if you would be so kind to donate to a charity, because I think he's part of a cycling group and they're doing a bike ride someplace.
Wow, good
for
him.
Yeah, but the best part about it is the you know, they have a list. His team is currently in fourth. The number two team is the team called the Menstrual Cycles. That's the greatest name ever.
That's awesome. It's funny. Oh, that's great.
Or a cyclist or
well,
something like that.
Good for him.
Yes. I mean, you know, yeah. That's the power. That's, the positive power of social media. We don't get to have that too often.
Now, I don't know much about how these things are created. Did he create that meme, or did somebody see him in something and they just went, eh, look at that?
I really have no idea, because I don't even know like the context of it, where it came from. All I know is just you see that pop up all the time. You either see the full GIF of it or you just see the photo of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, for the longest time, I had no idea. For the longest time, I thought it was like a younger, almost like a younger Roger Goodell.
Yeah, he did look like Roger Goodell. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, that's good. Good for him. Yeah, it's good to use your, you might as well use your power for good.
Yes.
Exactly.
Doing it for a charity.
Now, is that little girl that has that snarl face that you see a lot?
Is that the one where she's always like in front of a fire?
Yeah. Now, when she raises money for something, I want to know about that too.
Yeah. All those people. I mean, same memes over and over again. I just want to know the backstory of these people sometimes. Yeah. Like, where did this come from?
Oh, goodness. All right, what's the bad of the day?
Well, this bad of the day, because it's Friday, I'm going to send you with a good bad, almost like in a bad ass.
Okay, that sounds
bad,
good.
Right? Instead of change it up a little bit. Virginia Oliver. You ever hear of her? Probably not.
No, I've never heard of Virginia Oliver.
Let me tell you a little something about Virginia Oliver. She lives up in Maine, and she has been banding lobsters since she was 8 years old.
Oh, goodness gracious. That's right? Great. Right.
She is now 101 still doing it to this day.
Really?
Yeah. She often will go out on her son. I don't think she goes out every single day. I don't think it's like she has to make a living to do it. I mean, she's 101. She's probably good. But she still goes out on her son's boat. Her son is 78, and they're still going out there working lobster traps, banding lobsters. She's been doing it since before World War II.
No kidding. That's great.
Yes.
Man, I don't know if I'm envious of that or if I think it's crazy.
I'm 100% with you, because I sit there like, how awesome would it be to be doing a job that you love for that long? I mean, obviously, you got to love that. If you're 101 and still doing it, you love it. You love being out on the water.
Exactly.
But at the same time, I mean, you've had that job for what? Like, literally, what's it, 93 years?
She's been
doing that for 93 years.
I go back and forth with this a lot. I've lived in a lot of places, right? I know you have too. You've lived in Phoenix and Arizona, Southern Cal, and whatnot. I've lived in a lot of places. And part of me is very grateful for that, because I've lived in different climates and different time zones. I've met people around the country. I've gotten to see things around the country. I love it. I tell people some of my favorite memories of my early marriage with my wife, where we didn't have kids and we lived in Las Vegas, and we would randomly just go, let's go to LA for the weekend. And we would just leave on a Friday, or we would call, we would take the day off Friday or whatever. And we would just drive the 4 hour plus ride down to Southern Cal and go to Disneyland and whatever, and drive back to Vegas that weekend. I loved it. I love it. I lived in Charleston. I've lived in New Hampshire. I've lived in Florida. I've lived, all these places. But then there's a part of me, when I hear somebody who's lived in one place for 100 years or whatever, I go, that must be kind of cool too. Like, to be in one location and one thing, and just living an easy life of just this, I've done this for 60 years or whatever it is.
I know.
There's a part of me that, like, there's like a balance where I feel like there's good stuff about that. There's good stuff about the way my career has bounced around to different locations. I've lived in different places, Colorado, et cetera. But I kind of admire people where it's like, nope, started at this factory when I was 14 and I'm retiring at 87. Or lobster trapping for 100 years.
I know.
Right? Like, sounds great.
You know, and at this point, because you're up there in age, she's probably not going to stop, because if somebody goes and asks her, hey, what's the secret of longevity? She'd probably say, stay active.
That's probably true, right? What is it they say about the retirement, right? People want something to do.
Yeah.
And they tend to stay alive to do it.
Yep.
Right? And what are the odds that that woman is finding lobster traps? She's using modern day sonar / whatever modern way of lobster trapping is. Do you think she's still doing the old thing where she like taps on the water 3 times?
Yeah, I want
to
believe that.
Leads the lobster to the trap.
I want to believe that she's sitting there out in the water. She's like, no, leave that one about 5 more minutes.
Right, exactly.
Circle back around.
I can hear.
That needs another hour.
I can hear the lobsters crawling on the ocean floor towards the trap. Like some sort of mystical way of trapping lobsters that's 100 years old.
She
right?
just grabs like a cup of water, feels it. No, one's not good.
No, that's exactly
water's
right.
Like
she
too
reaches
warm.
In, she reaches in, she grabs a cup of water, she puts her finger in it. She's like, it's not a good day today.
Yeah.
Not a good day. Kind of like Billy and Twister. Right?
Yeah.
You mean he can tell what a storm is thinking? She probably knows what the lobsters are thinking.
Yep.
Right? Twister.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we had a little bit of a disconnection, but we just got to finish up with the good, the bad, and the dumb. Technical issue. So we're going to get to the dumb in just a second. But hey, when you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com. Pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to your curbside. Or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Also, Dave Preston will join us in a couple minutes. We'll talk about Washington's win over the Giants last night. On Thursday Night Football. All right. When we last left, we were talking about the woman who was lobster trapping for like 95 years, 100 years. We thought she's using some sort of ancient way of trapping rather than modern day equipment. That's the way we has to be, right? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's no other way that she's not using.
Right. And I mentioned, do we get my Twister comment in? Because I love Twister. All right, got to make sure. No, I didn't, but, you know. Yeah, it's just like Billy, you know. Just threw it into the Twister, and it didn't hit the ground. I love it. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Philip Seymour Hoffman is great. The whole movie is great from start to finish. Jamie Gertz. Just like, get me out of here. I don't want anything to do with these people. Jason Tornadoes. God. Oh, it's so funny. I think we talked about this one time we did Twister. I still don't understand. It's the writers had a problem in that both people, Jonas and Billy's team, were trying to do the same thing, and they were trying to do good for the people of Oklahoma. And the people around the world with tornadoes. They were both trying to build an early alert system. But Jonas was doing it for the money, not the science. So therefore, he had to be the bad guy. But he was trying to do the exact same thing. Just to give people an early warning. I don't think, if you get an early warning system that allows you to beat tornadoes by 15 minutes, I don't think you care what the motive was behind the creation of it. I think you're just thankful that it was created. That can get you to your shelter. All right, what's the dumb of the day? Oh, that's okay, because you did have a power surge. You probably have a whole bunch of things going on. Oh, my goodness. I hope we didn't fry the board while you were gone. I can hear you. Oh, yeah, because we're having a conversation. All right, if you can hear me but can't hear Ron, let me know on Twitter at Tony D Radio. So Ron doesn't believe he's registering through the airwaves. So if you hear me but don't hear Ron talking with me, let me know right now at Tony D Radio. Don't bother telling Ron. There's nothing he can do about it. If there is. Sure. I'm taking your word for it. So... All right.
I wasn't really going to go after this story, but Nicki Minaj posted a tweet the other day.
Okay, I'm glad you brought this up. I'm not following this story, but I know she's in the news, Nicki Minaj. I know she's in the news, but I don't know why.
Well, she had tweeted out that that she's not taking the vaccine. She's not getting the shot because her cousin's friend
Oh, boy. How, and does she know this is exactly because of the virus, the vaccine, I mean? Oh, okay. Well, I would think so, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm thinking, see, here's the thing. If you have like, how many, I mean, what is your couple million people follower on per 10 million? I don't know. What is a level of her fame get you on Instagram or Twitter or whatever? 10 million people, I guess. I don't know. Okay. It's got to be a couple million, right? You carry some sort of weight. You know, it's one of the things you got to be really careful with. You know, you just throw something out there and next thing you know, everyone's buzzing about it. And then you become, is she serious? Was she kidding? Was she making a joke? Does anybody even know? Like, on board with the no vaccine thing? Goodness. Oh goodness. I want people to get the vaccine. But I don't have any like that kind of celebrity to influence people or not influence people. But I think if I did, I'd probably just stay out of it. Right? I'd just be like, me personally, I'm not getting it, but I'm not gonna tell anybody anything because I know I carry some weight. And everybody should, you know, I don't think I would just to throw out that. And then, you know what that means? I mean, that's serious. That's setting the cause back. If you want more people vaccinated and more people like her who have that kind of influence are saying nope, then there's going to be more nopes. Well, then whatnot? So I don't know that. Yeah, I noticed she was in the news and I was like, why is she in the news? And I kind of wanted to follow it, but then I kind of got sidetracked. I've been watching too many sports documentaries lately. Last night I watched the one on the Malice in the Palace that Netflix has. And by the way, Jim Gray was on that. Jim Gray has been on a lot of things too. Remember we talked about Al Michaels and his career and all the things he's been able to see? Jim Gray is on that same level. Jim Gray was at the Malice in the Palace the night that Ron Artest went into the stands and Jermaine O'Neal and everybody was getting in fights when the Pacers were playing the Detroit Pistons back in the day. It's a good documentary. It makes you feel bad for Jermaine O'Neal. His participation in that, it kind of messed up his career for a long time. Ron Artest went on to win. He left the Pacers, went on to win a championship with the Lakers. But Jermaine O'Neal never had the same level of career. He kind of became synonymous with that. And it was kind of because Jermaine O'Neal was the guy that threw the punch. Remember the punch that missed? It was going up against the guy, kind of slipped. But he would have killed that fan if he had punched him. But it's a good documentary. There's been a lot of them out lately. I enjoy them. We just talked about the ones about the Mets. Yeah. Right, I know. I don't need anything to watch now. Yeah, there are. I think it's funny because The Last Dance, you know, everything is now kind of compared to The Last Dance, right? Like, if you want the definitive documentary, then you kind of lean into The Last Dance. But we talked about The Last Dance when it came out. One of the issues that we had with it, it was a Michael Jordan production, right? It was his version of a lot of events without really getting another side or another tale of what was going on. If that documentary wanted to bash Jerry Krause, Jerry Krause isn't alive to defend himself. Bash Jerry Krause all you want. He can't defend himself. But they wouldn't. If Jerry Krause was alive, they probably wouldn't have interviewed him for it, right? Because that wasn't really the purpose of The Last Dance. But it was a good trip down memory lane. It was what? How many episodes was The Last Dance? 10? That's a lot of episodes for a documentary. But it gave you a complete look. There's an it 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 we talked with the Mets documentary. That was four episodes of an hour long, and that seemed about right. Like, you couldn't extend it anymore. They got it all in. They only did one year and the plus and minus of the years surrounding that 1986 team. But if you really want to dive into stuff, it takes a while because you really are digging into stuff, and you got to make sure that you've got the right people to talk about it. If you miss one or two people, it's really hard to do a proper documentary. One of the things about this one I watched yesterday about the Malice in the Palace is they seem to have gotten everybody that was involved in it, right? They got Jermaine O'Neal. They got some of the Pistons players. They got Reggie Miller on board. They got Ron Artest on board. Jim Gray was there as an announcer. They got security people. They got the police that were there at the time that were trying to arrest the players, right? They did a lot to get the right people to tell their side of the story as to what was going on. And then maybe you view it differently, maybe you don't. Right. But it was pretty good. Documentaries are, I just like them, but I always go into them a little skeptical about what exactly am I getting? What angle am I getting? What are they trying to do? Are they trying to make me feel good about this? Are they trying to make me more angry about this? And if so, how are they doing it? But I like going down memory lane, and I like having people talk about major moments, especially in sports. I'm a sports historian in that way. I like going back and reliving some of the great moments in sports and finding out the big stories behind it. And I think that there are people out there doing really, really good work. Are you interested in this Muhammad Ali documentary that Ken Burns is doing? Yes. That's coming out. I am too. Yeah. We've had a lot. Yeah. You hit the nail on the head. The one thing about this is, okay, what is he offering that the 1,700 other ones haven't, right? There's a lot of Muhammad Ali stuff that's out there. Is he offering a different way? Is he putting the entire career in context? Who is going to narrate the Muhammad Ali documentary? That's a good question, right? Who's going to – Liev Schreiber, yeah. Who's going to do it? Because – I like the way Ken Burns does documentaries. I thought baseball was really good, but the problem I had with baseball, do you remember watching, did you watch baseball, the 9-inning version of what he did? Yeah, in the 90s. He did not, the problem was he didn't go through all the decades. He spent so much time in the early days of baseball, and then he quickly jumped and almost made like the 70s and 80s almost just like a he kind of just buzzed through them. Yeah, right? He was spending a lot of time in the 10s and 20s and 30s, and that's natural. I mean, he was probably giving people a history lesson on the sport that they weren't around to witness back in the 90s. But in Muhammad Ali's case, it'd be interesting to really dig in. But, you know, When We Were Kings is an excellent documentary. I thought the Sports Century Muhammad Ali that they did back in the 2000s, I thought that was excellent. So, yeah. We got a couple of those. Dave Preston's going to join us, WTOP. We're going to talk about last night's victory by Washington over the Giants. It was their first walk-off win against the Giants since 1981, and it's the first time Daniel Jones has lost to Washington in his short career. He was 4-0 against them going into this season. But a lot to dissect in terms of where Washington is in terms of as a team, what kind of win does that do for the team. Taylor Heinicke is now going to be the starter. A lot of it out of injury, but a lot of it was I felt like he's now really earned it, even if Ryan Fitzpatrick was available. Dave Preston, WTOP, joining us next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
To Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, last night, Washington beating the Giants. Last second field goal set up by a penalty. We'll get Dave Preston, WTOP, on a Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. How are you, my friend?
Doing well, doing well. Nothing quite as exciting as Thursday night football, even when it's played really poorly.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you. It's exciting that it goes back and forth, but what was your grade level for the actual play of the game?
Well, you know how the NFL has gone to just 3 preseason football games this year and 17 regular season. But I think last night we did discover that, yes, the league is playing a 4th preseason game. And unfortunately, I don't know if it was a combination of, and I'm not a fan of, I'm okay, and I understand the fact, yes, Thursday Night Football is here to stay, but I wish the league, when possible, would let teams play Thursday Night Football coming off a bye, because otherwise you have teams that are overworked and underprepared. And in the 21st century game, where it's even more violent than it was 30 years ago, as far as just the collisions that players need to recover from and the complexities, it's a lot more complex now than it was in 1985. You need a full week to properly prepare for a game, and it's akin to having an undercooked chocolate chip cookies or souffle, and it's just that the batter is not done on a lot of these games.
I agree completely. You know, you hit the nail on the head. It's something that if you're around a team, covering a team on a daily basis, then you really understand why guys don't like these games. When you see the rhythm of a week, what these guys go through on Monday and or Tuesday, and usually days off on Tuesday, but when they come back, how much they're banged up and hurt, and everyone's dealing with a nag here or there, especially late in the season. These Thursday night games, you're 100% right. Until you realize how disruptive of a week that can be preparing for these short week games, you don't really get it.
Now, week one and week two, I think week one, obviously, there's nobody playing in week zero, and with week off, Thursday Night Football works. This was actually, I thought this could work from, an aesthetic standpoint, because you've only played one game, and you're not having teams go cross-country. Giants are having to come down to, D.C., which it's not that far of a trip. So if there would be a week two Thursday night game that I think wouldn't stink from not preparing or what have you, it would be this one. Unfortunately, the Giants and Washington, they bring their own sort of stinkness that isn't even involved with short weeks. I think it was we had 11 penalties for the Giants, 9 for Washington. Teams were combined 8 for 25 on third down. You had dropped passes. You had misexecution. It wasn't the most beautiful game last night.
Taylor Heinicke, I liked his play against Tampa. I get bringing in a veteran in Ryan Fitzpatrick, but where does he stand? I mean, it's one thing to be like, well, you're the starter because of was he given a fair shot to be the starter after last year's playoff game?
I think he was, but I think the idea was they needed to have somebody in who was more of a proven quarterback, because you look at his sample size, very small. He had not started a regular season game for the Burgundy and Gold until last night. He had, I think, one career start that was in Carolina, so he does have the experience working with Ron Rivera and offensive coordinator Scott Turner, but he doesn't have they don't have a lot of proof that he can manage a team during a 16, now 17 game season. So no matter how excited they were from whatever flashes Taylor showed them last year, they needed kind of, somebody in the room who they thought, okay, if Taylor Heinicke doesn't work out, we at least have a solid veteran. Unlike a few years ago when, after Kirk Cousins left and after Alex Smith got hurt, they went with Case Keenum and a bunch of tomato cans and got roasted.
Yeah. Overall, what did you think of his play? Had the bad interception, but he looks like a guy that wants to make the big play so badly that sometimes I wonder if that's a handicap for him.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting seeing how he fares against Buffalo, because it's one thing to, if you're an understudy, it's one thing to step out on stage that first time It's another thing to step on that stage the next week, and you've had that preparation. And then now there's more tape on you out there. Now they know more of your tendencies. And it's akin to a rookie in Major League Baseball coming in and Sam Horn having a hot August. And then the next year they're like, okay, this is what he does. And instead of hitting, 30 homers, he's hitting 205, and he's out of the league within, 2 or 3 years. I think I like what I've seen in Taylor Heinicke. Is it a long-term thing for this franchise? I don't know. They have a lot of other issues as well. Against the Chargers, they had issues getting off the field. They didn't have those issues last night, but penalties at the most inopportune times. It was more of a problem against the Chargers, but there are a lot of other issues. The quarterback is just one part of this machine, but the fact that he wasn't absolutely awful last night, that's a good thing moving forward.
Yeah, I was blown away with Dexter Lawrence's offsides because I was thinking to myself, if there's one thing you don't want to do in a 48-yard field goal is go offside, let the guy try to kick it. You know what I mean? Just like say, if he beats us with a 48-yarder, he beats us with a 48-yarder, but I'm not giving him another shot when 5 yards closer.
Right, and I mean, the thing is, too, is that Hopkins has had issues all throughout the preseason. He was missing longer field goals. He missed a 51-yarder this past Sunday against the Chargers, and that was a situation set up by there were three flags against Washington in a five-play sequence, one of which was not sending penalties. So in a one-possession game, instead of Washington attempting a 41-yard field goal, they attempted a 51. He missed. And it felt like on many levels the Giants were trying to give away this game. Nobody tries to give away a game. But the fact that was it Darius Slayton's drop, I think I heard Troy Aikman say something along the lines of, well, William Jackson was looking for help there. And it's like, yes, he did have help, Slayton's hands. And then that interception, the fact that it's not that the Giants had to settle for a field goal, but the fact that Washington got the ball back before the 2-minute warning.
Right.
I'm sure Jason Garrett's a very nice person on many levels. I'm sure he's wonderful to hang out with during the holidays, but he is not, I'm not sold on him as an offensive coordinator with the Giants personnel. It felt as though when you get that, when somebody fumbles like that, yes, your priority is to get the points, but also burn off a ton of clock. And I think if there was a minute left as opposed to two and change and maybe, another burn timeout because you would manage the plays a little bit better, Washington doesn't get even, downfield in position to get a game-winning field goal.
It is so early, so there's so much football to play. But right now, today, Friday, after a Thursday night game, what does this win mean for Washington? What context do we put this in?
It keeps the dogs off of Coach Ron Rivera and company for not bringing in a better quarterback. And it means that, this team's not 0-2. The last time they had made the playoffs when they were 0-2, I think, was 1984, when that was when Joe Theismann, and that was an 0-2 where, if you look at that season, they lost to Miami, who wound up winning the AFC that year, San Francisco, who wound up winning the Super Bowl that year. So that, even though they started 0-2, that was 0-2 with a caveat. I'm going to say that if they had lost last night, the Giants and Chargers might not be in the Super Bowl this season. I think what this does, Tony, is this gives the team a little bit of breathing room to develop as a squad, because if they had lost last night, they'd be 0-2, 0-1 in the division, and with another loss to Daniel Jones, a guy who, if you look at the numbers, he had owned them until last night.
He
was 4-0 against the 4-0. Not only that, but he had a passer rating of 100. He was garbage against the rest of the league, but awesome against Washington. And then they would have to go to Buffalo, a team that has Super Bowl dreams. You could easily see this team starting 0-3. And teams do make runs into contention after starting 0-2. 0-3 is so much more of a tougher hill to climb. And this also puts a little bit of positivity in that locker room, in those meeting rooms. It's always nice to be able to trust the process. And you in anything you do, you have to trust the process. But if part of trusting, it's always easier to trust the process when you see the results work in your favor occasionally. Like last night, they can go back and say, you know what, we have a lot to do, but there's a lot of positives that we can draw off of our win against the Giants. And, you know, moving forward, this is not a good division that they're in. There's no, they won it last year with a 7-9 record. I have them going 8-7-2 this year. Heaven forbid. Hey, last year I had them going 6-7-3. So it's just this team. This team is going. What this means is they are going to be barring, you know, something disastrous happening, this team is in this division slog for the long haul. Philadelphia looked really good in week one, and you'd never know with new head coaches, with new quarterbacks, starting in, a full season. But Philly might be too good to catch, but there's, if not, and I have complete confidence in the Eagles, you know, not playing well, this is going to be, feels like a long 4-month race between four teams that really aren't good. And if they had lost last night, it would have been a real torpedo to their hopes.
It's true, because I think there are other teams in this league. Look, they all say we want to win every game, and we believe we can win every game. We get it. But there are teams like Washington and New York. If you have an opportunity to win a game, you better win it, because there's not going to be a ton of them on the schedule this year.
No, and the thing is, too, is last year when they made their run, it was against a lot of backup quarterbacks. Even their first win in that stretch came when Cincinnati had lost Joe Burrow to injury. And then Dallas, it was on, I think, option, you know what they say, go with plan B. Dallas was maybe on plan G at the time.
Right.
And you looked at who they beat down the stretch. Philly, even in the last game, kind of, put their game plan in the fridge to allegedly get a better draft pick, but that would never happen because the NFL is all about integrity. But so this year, Washington is going not. Their schedule is much tougher. They have a first place schedule. They're playing all four quarterbacks who were in last year's NFL Final Four. So the schedule is much tougher. They might be a better team than they were last year and still might be around the 7 or 8 win level. And even though that might, last year it was good enough to win the division, that's rarely good enough. You need 10, 11 wins to realistically think that you're going to win the division.
Dave, always good catching up with you, my friend. And I knew, like, to this game, I was like, I got to get Dave on. This was too wild of a game not to have your input. So thank you so much.
Oh, just like 2020 was the craziest decade I've ever experienced. Last night was the craziest, week of, it felt like 3 or 4 games in one last night.
Oh, it totally was, completely. Dave, always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You got it. Dave Preston, WTOP, on a Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. More Wake Up Call when we continue on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Sports Map Radio and Wake Up Caller, thanks to Dave Preston. Dave and I have known each other a very long time. I know I've told you guys this before. We worked together at a small, well, not really a small, it was actually the biggest AM station in the state of New Hampshire. It was my first job out of college. He was a year up out of Syracuse. So we were the 2 and 3 guy. I was the 3 guy on a 3-man sports team at this AM station. And so we got a lot of work. We went to Celtics camp together. We would do we would go to events and swap off for calling in reports and whatnot. But I had this joke about, well, not really joke about Dave Preston, but an interesting story. So our boss was the sports director, and he would do the morning news. He was the morning news guy. And our jobs, basically back then, before the age of internet, was we would go get sound bites. Our job was to basically cover sporting events for the morning news. So we would go to Patriots games. We would go to, New Hampshire events, and we would get sound bites, and we'd go back to the studio, and we would cart them up back in old carts back in the day before you know, computers and MP3s and whatnot. And then we would leave him a note saying, here, cart one is this guy, and this is what he's saying. It runs 15 seconds, and this is cart two. And then sometimes we would cart up national people, too. We'd have a feed, and we would get some national bites, and then we would cart them up for him as well. Well, remember Steve Carlton, the old Phillies pitcher?
Yeah.
He, I think, he either got into the Hall of Fame or there was some event with Steve Carlton. Now, Steve Carlton was famous for never talking to the media. Never talking to the media, right? So Dave thought it would be funny that if he had three empty carts, no audio, and then he would write, cut one, Steve Carlton talks about making the Hall of Fame. Cut two, Steve Carlton talks about his time with the Phillies. Cut three, Steve Carlton talks about the influence on his life. And the carts would be empty because he assumed our boss would listen to the cuts and realize there was nothing on them. And then he thought he knew the joke that Steve Carlton, he didn't. Our boss took the carts into the studio with him and said, and here's Steve Carlton talking about making it to the Hall of Fame. And there was nothing played. And he left a big note for Dave. And Dave had to explain, I was just kidding. I thought you knew that Steve Carlton never said anything to the media ever and was not going to be speaking at this point at all anyway.
Yeah, that's great.
It was really, I thought it was so clever, and I laughed my tail off, and we had a good laugh about it. That was one of those jokes that we laugh about even 25 years later, because I thought it was clever. It just backfired.